Are Kyrie and James Harden going to sign their extension?
His trade value is not there. And when you hear reports...
Phil has been paid $16 million of his $33 million salary.
I know about people that have certain clauses
what
in their contract.
What happens next year with Giannis Antetokounmpo? He will be eligible for a Supermax next summer. If he re-signs, a new reality is the players are going to move around. And the players are not going to want to spend their whole, you know, life...
And because they didn't want to go into the penalty of the luxury tax, they traded James Harden. Somebody's going to be making $50 million.
He probably could have made a little bit more money this summer in free agency.
I think he could have got a lot more in the offseason. When you got a chance to secure the bag,
you secure it, man.
No question.
What's going on, party people? This is another edition of the Bird Rights Podcast with Stephen Bagel. I am here, as you guys know, I'm here with Corbin Ford. We have been doing our 30 offseason previews. We are starting with the non-playoff teams, and then as teams get eliminated from the playoffs, we will phase ourselves in. So today we're going to be talking Portland Trailblazers. There's nobody to better bring on than co-hosts of both the Jack Ramsey's podcast and Danny and Dusty on 1080 The Fan. That is Danny Meringue. Danny, how are you doing today?
How's it going? it's funny you mentioned the teams eliminated from the playoffs. We could have done this in like January. January, I think they're mathematically eliminated like sometime in February.
Yeah,
is what it actually was. A 21 win season. It's the least amount of wins I've ever covered. It was both a tough and a necessary year. Like I beat Portland fans over the head this summer after and leading into the Damian Lillard trade. A reset is not fun, but it is necessary. And by the final 6 weeks of the season, I look like death. So it was a challenge even for me, even when I was, you know, probably lecturing people like, just calm down. This is what needs to happen.
Wow.
So, Danny, let me ask you. Obviously, the Trailblazers last year took Scoot Henderson with the third overall pick. Mm-hmm. How much did that Scoot pick dictate the Damian Lillard trade in terms of like, okay, we kind of have his replacement now in tow?
It didn't.
It
could have been. It could have been anybody, with the exception of Wemby. I've got a pretty good relationship with Dame, and had they won the lottery, and Wemby's the prize, Dame probably stays. That's the reality of that, because as we saw this year, he's transcendent. And you saw him with like replacement level guard play look like a god on the basketball court. What does he look like with a top 75 all time point guard? You know, yep. that kind of guy, like, yeah, he would have elevated things pretty drastically. And then they would have also been able to make some moves beyond that. Because when you've got that, those two guys, stuff kind of starts falling in place pretty quickly. But beyond that, things had really run their course in Portland. If you put a gun to Dame's head or Joe Cronin's head and asked, you know, demanded answers, both would probably tell you that Dame should have been traded the second Neil Olshey was fired, because that was kind of the line of demarcation of where the organization was. And it didn't necessarily have anything to do with Neil. Well, I mean, it had everything to do with Neil because he was a terrible GM, but it had everything to do with their resources were exhausted at that point. Like, even if on draft night, the Blazers were shopping the number three pick, and I was pretty certain they were going to trade it. There were offers on the table that you will, okay, like, that's a relatively big name or a bigger name player. But with the exception of Wemby, I don't think there was a single player you could add to the team and be like, well, in the next 2 years, that might be a team that pushes for the conference finals. Because I think a combination of Dame, Wemby, you get a summer to figure it out. You add one more player to that mix, and yeah, you're a really good team. Beyond that, if they made a move for anybody else, it was, well, they're going to need to move this guy, and they're going to need to move this guy, and they're going to need to add this, and they just didn't have the assets. Let's say that the draft went differently, and the Hornets took Scoot Henderson, and Brandon Miller is there. Dame's still probably gone. Does he maybe think about it? Maybe. But he's still probably gone. That's the thing. It's like, the Scoot decision itself wasn't the independent driver as much as the player that's coming in, with the exception of a generational freak, was a signal that the franchise is going another direction. So it wasn't necessarily Scoot as it was they used the pick as to draft a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old in Brandon's case. And I think that was the bigger swinging point more than anything else, because they had a lot of discussions leading up to the draft. And there was a lot of discussions around tertiary moves that I heard going into the draft, that if they were to trade the player or trade the pick for a player or a group of players, that, you know, it could get more interesting. And they had those same kind of talks the year before when they had the number 7 overall pick and they took Shaedon Sharpe. The Toronto Raptors wanted that pick to draft Shaedon Sharpe, but Masai Ujiri and his staff decided they wanted to ask for the world. They wanted that pick, Josh Hart, and a combination of either Nasir Little or another one. And it was just like, that was just too rich for Portland at that point in time to get OG Anunoby, who was given away for peanuts a year later. So you just kind of look at all these kind of diversion points over the last 18 months. And I think that that's the bigger thing. It was that it needed to happen 2 years ago. If you're talking about a perfect world for both player and franchise, it doesn't make it suck any less for either side. Dame did not want to leave, and the Blazers did not want to trade him. But it's what needed to happen.
Ripping the Band-Aid off in that way?
Yeah, that's really what like it was. Because nobody wanted to be the bad guy. From a personal standpoint, neither Dame nor Joe are bad guys. And nobody wanted to be. Dame didn't want to be the one that forced out, and Joe didn't want to be the guy that traded one of, if not the greatest player in franchise history.
Yeah,
that's a tough sell for both sides.
I ran the guy out of town. Yeah,
exactly. Hey, I just got the job. Let me go ahead and run the guy out of town who was going to have a statue here.
That's true.
That's pretty tough. And the thing about this is, for people outside of Portland, Dame is going to be in this city when he's done. Like, this is home for him now. Like, this isn't like kind of home and he goes to LA in the offseason. He built a $10 million castle in the Portland suburbs with a roller skating rink and a custom basketball court, like a studio. It's his home. So he's going to be here and be a part of this community and everything else that kind of comes with that. And so, like, this whole thing, this saga and that decision, it took its toll on the city and on the organization. I think Scoot stepped into this, and had it been Brandon Miller, would have been the same situation, where even though they weren't necessarily taking on the mantle of Damian Lillard, they had to because of the changes that were coming.
Wow. I guess kind of I have one more question just based off of the Dame leaving and everything. In your mind, I mean, in your estimation, would it have been better? This is my opinion, to have, you know, and I get it, nobody wanted to be that guy, all of that, but to have, you know, parted ways with Dame around the time that CJ McCollum was left. Like, I felt like for that to be
that was like when Neil Shoy got fired. And, yes, at that time.
Yeah, like that would have been, okay, that would have been the ideal time. Yeah, my mistake. I forgot the timeline between Neil.
No, Neil got fired December 4th of 2021, if I remember right. Okay. 2021, yeah.
Probably.
Good God, it's been that long now. And then CJ was traded in January, right after the Covington and Norm Powell deals.
Okay.
So there was a liquidation there pretty quickly. And that signaled, number one, like, we want a different style team. And that's the thing, is that team, that era, the Dame CJ teams in general, this is kind of a holistic thing. And this kind of goes to like the team building aesthetic, as it were. I wrote about this endlessly. From basically the time that LaMarcus Aldridge left the franchise until Dame asked out, the Portland Trailblazers were the least athletic team in the NBA. Wow. Think about the level of explosion and size on the Trailblazers. It was gone. And so the Blazers kind of reset on top of that, because now they're a bigger, stronger, longer, more athletic team. They can't shoot right now, but they are a significantly more athletic team. And that was kind of what they wanted to do, was get more towards being a more up and down, more athletic team. As you look at guys look at who they have on their team right now with Scoot Henderson, Shaedon Sharpe, Tumani Kamara, like the DeAndre Ayton at the center position. They just got bigger, stronger, longer everywhere to kind of change the dynamic of how the roster's built out.
That makes sense, for sure.
So let's pivot into this year's draft. I think, Danny, you kind of segue a little bit into it yourself in terms of like what the Trailblazers really need.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not a big proponent of drafting for need as much as I am drafting best player available. But, I mean, what type of guy? The Blazers, I looked at the odds. They have a 50% chance of top four pick.
Mm-hmm.
21% chance the pick is either 6 or 7, and 9% chance the pick is either 5 or 8. So basically 50% chance top four, 50% chance 5 to 8. What type of, I guess, what archetype of player, if you don't have one, if you don't have a specific guy in mind, do you think would kind of appeal to the Blazers given the roster construction?
The best player available. That's not a guard.
Okay.
That's really what it comes down to. If the best player in this class was a guard, number one, it would be death. Number two, that player would have to be a significantly higher level prospect for the Blazers to consider taking him even at that spot, because nobody has shown that they can't be drafted over per se on this team. But in order to invest anything more in a guard and a cut bait on another one, just to make sure that one's developed, you'd have to be trying to think of the last guard with all of the John Wall level hype coming out. Like, you'd have to be that high of a guard prospect. Like, well, you'd have to have a lot of juice behind you where you're like the no doubt number one. My board that I put out March 27th. So it's about a month old. I'll do my board again one more time after the combine and workouts. I don't like changing my board every week. If the Blazers win the lottery, I would be shocked if they didn't take Alex Saar. Mm-hmm. I think Alex Saar, his size and his mobility, he's the best mover I think I've ever seen at that size. The way he moves at 7'1", he moves like a 6'4" guard. And it's just not normal. And you can say, well, the offense isn't there. He doesn't project to be a guy. And I'm like, if his tools come together, he's got defensive player of the year capabilities. And this team doesn't have that. Now, you can say, well, the rebounding isn't great and his shot doesn't project great. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. But 7'1", incredible athletic skill, shot blocking ability, runs the floor like a deer. You hope and pray the other stuff hits. You know, I think you're taking the biggest swings. My board, the shortest guy in my top five is Topic at 6'6". And the only reason he's in my top five is because he is a 6'6 guard. And so you can kind of talk yourself into, well, maybe he's kind of just a big bodied guard where he's more of a 2 than a 1, even if he's got the ball in his hand. Cody Williams from Colorado is a guy that even though he didn't shoot that many threes or he didn't impact the game as much, I think he's a longer tail development guy. And again, 6'8", 6'6", 7'1", it's size. I mean, I don't have Dillingham or Reed Sheppard, both the Kentucky guys, until 7 or 8 on my draft board because they're 6'1 and 6'2". Like, this draft, it has size. And, like, I don't like a Modest Buzelis type. He's not my cup of tea. But if you believe the shooting is real, then you can talk yourself into a 6'10" guy who could possibly put the ball down on the floor and be kind of a stretch shooter, even a Zachary Risache. I think they're going to stay away from the – obviously, the Isaiah Colliers and the Ron Hollins of the world, where you've got, you know, guard-like tendencies and guard-like sizes without the shooting. Because the Blazers conducted their exit interviews and, you know, they knew coming into the season that they were going to be short on playmaking and defense. Or, excuse me, playmaking and shooting. And I think going into this draft, not only are they looking at guys they're going to draft, I think they're looking at guys that they'll likely trade. I wouldn't be surprised at all if on draft night, a guy like Malcolm Brogdon is traded. The thing about the new CBA is that that second level is going to be very punitive. And I think you're going to see a lot of teams wanting to get out of it. And from the way things are shaping up behind the scenes in the NBA, I wouldn't be shocked to see some high level players moved. And with the restrictions and the impediments of the new CBA, I think you're going to need to have other teams involved in deals. And I think that's a place that Portland really is going to look to capitalize. And because of how teams have prospects slotted in this draft, I think it can make for a lot of fluid movement for like, hey, we'll move this guy for, to allow this pick to allow for this deal to, be a transaction that works for everybody involved. Because I don't think anybody's, crawling over dead bodies to draft anybody this year. There's guys that that a team likes, but this isn't Victor Wembanyama last year, or it's not Cooper Flagg or Ace Bailey or one of those kind of guys next year. I mean, next year you're going to see the draft picks not move. Like that's the thing. So, but this year, I think you could see a lot of picks change hands as they, help facilitate a deal here or there. And I think that's what's going to be really interesting. And I think Portland, because they have so many salary slots, and this is kind of the point, is that they have Malcolm Brogdon's $22 million. They have Robert Williams's $12 million. They have Jeremy Grant's basically $27 million. Anthony Simons, $25 million. They've got so many different levels of salary slots to work with. Matisse Thybulle's $12 million. Like they can sit there and help facilitate deals all over the place. And that's a big reason why they didn't make a move at the deadline is one, the offers that they had for guys were for picks in 2024, which nobody else wants more of. But beyond that, you want to have the flexibility. One GM that I was talking to, I asked him kind of what they thought of how things were shaping out was he goes, the Blazers are very clearly priming to do something this summer. After they didn't do anything, he goes, I can see the outlines of like what they want to do. And just kind of asking around, everybody very much believes that Portland's going to be a team that's going to be active. So I think the lottery order is going to dictate that, because I don't think they're necessarily married to their pick position unless it's one. But then again, also if they have one and somebody comes to them with an offer they can't say no to, this is the year where you're like, okay, Let's put it this way. If the Blazers have Sar 1 and the Wizards have, Topic 1, and the Wizards end up 2 or 3, and they're like, man, we really want to make sure that the Spurs get 2, and the Blazers can move from 1 to 3 and get some other asset out of it, whether it's, a Kispert, an Avdija, or whatever it is, to help facilitate something that makes sense for them going forward, I think that's something that they would consider.
That makes sense. I mean, as shocking as it kind of sounds like in a way, it does make sense in a draft. Like you said, that's, there's talent there, but at the same time, there's no like surefire thing. So if you can get, assets for the privilege of making a trade, sure, right? Like that, I'm just surprised.
If you've got everybody on the same level, if you've got five guys on the same tier and you're really just splitting hairs, does it really matter which one you get if you're a rebuilding team and you need a lot of different things? Not necessarily. Yeah, not if you believe your scouting department. And that's the one thing that the Trailblazers, they do believe in. They believe in their ability to scout and develop. So, and if you're going to put your money where your mouth is, then you have to be okay with making that kind of move.
For sure.
So, unlike last episode, we talked about the Memphis Grizzlies last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And the Grizzlies are similar to the Trailblazers in the aspect of they basically are already going to have a full roster in terms of, guaranteed, even non-guaranteed guys are likely to be picked up. So they might not be big players in free agency. But as Danny alluded to a little bit, the trade market is most interesting. And it's the four of the five guys you just mentioned, maybe even Matisse Thybulle as well. Jeremy Grant, Anthony Simons, Malcolm Brogdon, Robert Williams. And that's just Thybulle in there as well. Him and Robert Williams, again, make about the same salary. How different should we expect this Trailblazers roster to look from that standpoint of, being able to help these second apron teams, even teams that are borderline second apron, facilitate trades?
I think you're probably looking at two. The line there is probably 2.5. And whether you take the over or the under is interesting. The Dallas Mavericks were interested in Matisse Thybulle. That's why he got the deal that he got. Multiple teams called on Robert Williams. Multiple teams called on Malcolm Brogdon. I know multiple teams who've called on Anthony Simons. Like Jeremy Grant, you can name half the league called on him. I always love the, well, they won't really won't get anything for Jeremy Grant because he makes a lot of money. It's like he makes like 18% of the cap, I believe it was what it is at right now. Oh, sorry, 21. My mistake. 3 whole percent points more. For a really good player. That's what really good players make. Starting level players, starting level wings. You go look at the number of players in the NBA who are shooting above 38% on volume threes over 6'8". The list is like 10 guys. It's a short list. And all of a sudden you have some on the ball juice like Jeremy Grant with defensive versatility. The whole idea that that he's a negative asset is one of the more insane things that I've heard regularly about him. They aren't going to get the world for him, but they'll get positive return on him. Malcolm Brogdon, the one thing about him is the injury history. He had his exit interview the other day. He's still not 100% from the PRP injection he had in his elbow. His elbow bothered him last year when he almost got traded to the Clippers, and they ran out of time before the Porzingis deal. So he's getting better. Robert Williams, I've talked to him a bunch throughout the year. I've had a pile of knee surgeries. My knees are ash, and Rob is getting nowhere near the number of surgeries I've had, but he is about the same age as I was as when I had a very devastating leg injury. And talking to him about his mentality and where he's at, you know, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, whatever, however you want to phrase it, like you could tell he was kind of going through it. The key for him is like he's not putting his foot down on any exact time frame to come back, which is probably smart, but also a little bit scary. So what does his return look like? You know, it's probably going to be limited until he actually gets out on the floor or he gets some workouts in. But in the same token, that also means the Blazers can, I hate saying this because it sounds so crass, they can move on from him if they wanted to. You know, it's so I think that you're going to, I don't think anyone on this roster is untouchable, and that includes Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe. I think if the absolute right deal came down the pipe for anyone on this team, like there, nobody has done anything on this team to say, yeah, no, you can't move that guy.
Even Scoot.
Like they don't have, even Scoot. Yeah.
Wow.
Even Scoot.
Look, I mean, he hasn't done anything, but I'm just saying like a young guy who just, you know, 1 year.
If the right offer came down, and again, it's a scale, like,
oh, of course,
Scoot's obviously it's gonna cost a lot because he's a number three overall pick who does, despite you know it's been very interesting. You guys are on the outside, so I'll kind of ask you this: the Scoot Henderson's first five games were some of the worst basketball I've ever seen. They were very bad. His final 20 games, he averaged 19-7-4 on 43-38-82 shooting.
Wow.
Does the start of the season carry more weight, less weight? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, it's one of those things where it's like, I think he was so bad that everybody checked out on him. And the Blazers were so bad as a team this year that everybody kind of checked out on them. And again, I don't think he's Jason Tatum star. I don't think he's John Morant level star. I think there's some gates he needs to tick, but I don't think it's one of those things where he was, even in his final 20 games, so great that you're like, yes, this is a foundational franchise piece. I think he's probably a number two, at least a number three, as far as like potential. But I don't, this is the thing about rebuilds, it's always interesting, is finding the number one. So I think the Blazers are willing to move basically anyone and everyone to go get the number one, if they think that will get them closer to getting that.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
No, that does. That does. And I to answer your question, I definitely take the latter part of Scoot Henderson's play over the former. Like, I'm sure it's somewhere in the middle, but let's be real. We talked about rookie guards, you know, it's the hard position to get into. Now, did we think it was going to be that bad? No. But
here's the thing about rookie guards. They all suck.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the thing. Exactly.
They're all bad. All of them.
Exactly.
I was going to say, look at De'Aaron Fox and Darius Garland's rookie year. They were disasters.
Disasters, yeah. Yep. And if you make them teenagers, they're atrocious. Like I did all the research before he even played a game here this year, and there's three guys that have averaged 15 and 5 as rookie teenage guards. Kyrie Irving, LaMelo Ball, Stephon Marbury. That's it.
What? That's an eclectic group.
Now, Scoot just missed it because he finished the season averaging, I believe, 14 and 6. So he missed it on the point side of things. But I did find this because it's 15 and 5 is just kind of an arbitrary line, but it was one of those things where it was like, 15 and 5 sounds like, okay, you're functional, right? Like as a scorer, as a facilitator. But yeah, three teenage guards have ever done it. That's it.
Mm.
The guys who have done it as teenagers aren't guards. It's LeBron. It's Luka. It's the big bodied wings that have done it. Those are the only guys that have done it because they have the advantage of being freaks of nature.
Wow.
So
there it is.
Yeah. In terms of the question Danny asked, I agree with Corbin. I take more stock into this final 15-20 games that's been played rather than the first five. I also think it doesn't help Scoot the fact that he was in a rookie class with Wemby, Brandon Miller, and Chet Holmgren.
Yeah.
Which, you know, obviously inflates the lack of progress. I mean, I think he made progress, but the lack of production he had his rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, to answer
your question, it 100% does. You have, and this is going to sound like hyperbole, but in Wemby, you maybe have the best rookie ever.
Yep.
That's the kind of season that he's had. He's been like his impact, his box score and his defensive impact we've never seen before. Like he's going to be the guy that gets a five. Like think about this. When he moved to center, he was 2010, 5-3-2. That means going into a given night, he needs two more blocks and three more steals than he averages to get a 5-5.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just think about how dumb that is. Like, he needs to be that much better on any given night to put up a 5-5 based on his averages. He's going to get a quadruple double.
Wow.
Like, if you find me a sports book that will let me place this bet, please point me in the direction because I can't find anybody who will publicly let me take that action because he will 100% have a game where he has 10 blocks and 10 assists on top of his points and rebounds. It's going to happen.
Wow.
And because of that, Scoot looks awful in comparison because we look at a guy who profiles, and this is insane to say, but Wemby profiles as a GOAT. Like if you look 15 years down the road, he has the potential to blow through everything we've ever known and understood about basketball. And there's nothing Scoot Henderson or Brandon Miller or Chet Holmgren can do about it. Chet's got to be the one that's got to be most frustrated because any other year we'd be screaming about how great Chet is. I mean, he's playing right now in the playoffs and performing spectacularly. And
yes,
there was like, you know, whatever.
He's not Wemby.
Exactly. And it's like, no, he's just an absolute freak otherwise.
I think Bobo's closer to him than he is to Wemby. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Ooh.
I'm just
spicy.
Just kidding.
Spicy. I like it.
I know. I had to know. Is that something, Steve? Oh.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had a whole bunch of trade targets for Portland listed out. I'm not going to run through all of them because it's going to take way too much time. But I don't know. I was looking at a team like Brooklyn, I think, might make some sense for like a Malcolm Brogdon type or even an Anthony Simons type. I mean, they need a guard. You could do like a Dennis Schroeder plus for either one of those guys. Let me see who else I have. Dallas, I think, might make some sense for Jeremy Grant, though they did just get PJ Washington. So
yes, they did have interest in Jeremy Grant in the past.
And Matisse, like you said, as well. Matisse Thybulle, obviously. Yep. They signed him in restricted free agency.
Yep.
I could see Portland taking on that Andrew Wiggins contract.
If they did that, it would come at a premium. I'm telling you right now, nobody in the NBA is taking on that contract without getting a whole lot back. And the Warriors don't have a whole lot to work with.
Yeah, that's fair. But, I mean, that's the guy when I'm a Warriors.
But, yes,
that.
I As far as the Blazers targeting players, yes, I think they'll be looking to facilitate, but I think the facilitation stuff is secondary. I think they're looking more at younger players that maybe don't fit. And I'm not saying these names as names. I'm using this. These are examples. Cleveland making a decision on Jared Allen or Evan Mobley, if that inevitably comes. Orlando, do they think that Franz and Paolo can work? Do the Rockets keep, they're not interested, I don't think the Blazers are interested in Jalen Green, but do they not think that one of Tari Eason, Cam Whitmore, Jabari Smith Jr. is going to be there long term? And the Rockets want a veteran like a Jeremy Grant. Like, I think those are the kind of players, if you're talking about the Blazers targeting guys, I think those are the kind of ways and spots that they're looking at. And then the facilitation stuff would come after either exhausting those options or making those kind of transactions.
Okay. And again, for a team that just started the rebuild or the retooling process.
Oh no, it's a rebuild. You can 100, when you trade away a top 75 player in his prime who is gonna, like I said, gonna have a statue here, it's a rebuild. It's 100%, it's what needed to happen. Like they mm-hmm. tore it down to the studs. I mean, you look at who they had on the floor, and they were dumb young, and they will be dumb young going forward. There were nights where Anthony Simons, Jeremy Grant, DeAndre Ayton were the only guys with any experience on the roster who were active. I was doing this during the season. If you take Robert Williams out because he got hurt so early, and you look at their active roster on any given night, DA, Jeremy, Ant, Brogdon, Tease. Those were the guys, those five guys were the guys with any kind of experience. And they all had injuries. Ant missed 19 games. Malk missed about that many down the stretch. DA missed, 15 total, basically in the middle of the year before he got shut down for the last week. But other than that, you had seven guys that were in the rotation because of various injuries that had a year or less experience. Shaedon Sharpe, Scoot Henderson, Tumani Kamara, Chris Murray, Duop Reith. You add Delano Banton to that, who, although it's his third year, he's played 50 NBA games. Like, it's not a guy who's got a ton of experience, right? Jabari Walker. You just kind of go down the list, and you're like, on any given night, none of these guys have any real experience. So, yeah, it was a full-on teardown. It's a rebuild, and now they need to find their corner piece.
And we're going to be doing a Wizards episode sometime next week. Wizards kind of did a similar thing in terms of trading Bradley Beal. And similar to Portland, I think it's something they needed to do whether they wanted to. Well, obviously, Bradley Beal's not on the same level as Damian Lillard.
No, but they also, Washington needed to tear it down to the studs. Like, that's, yeah. Unless you are Boston to an extent, but even then they tore down, you know, a kind of a quote unquote dynasty team that won a title, most overrated one title ever.
A title.
You know, let's not pretend it's not a dynasty. It won a title. Calm down. But they tore that down. They traded it all away. And then they were on the right side of luck when Markel Fultz didn't pan out for the 76ers. And instead Jason Tatum ended up being that guy. And then Jaylen Brown ends up being that guy. And a lot of this is luck, but unless you're Boston, you're LA, you're Miami, or you're one of the Texas teams where you have either a built-in advantage financially with Texas and Florida, or you have a historical benefactor like the Celtics and Lakers, you have to tear down. Look at every team that is in the playoffs right now. Every single one of them, with the exception of those marquee markets, had to tear down. Oklahoma City tore down and collected all the picks. Minnesota tore down and got Anthony Edwards and then went all in on guys. Like, Cat's a number one overall pick? Anthony Edwards is a number one overall pick? Mike Conley was, a lotto pick even, 2007?
Yeah.
You go down the list of, the guys that you have to compile on a roster to make this work. The only one that's not like that was the Knicks. And even then, they had to tear down what had been torn down to get to where they are now. So it's the Knicks did it in a different way, which congratulations to them because they built a really fun, albeit obnoxious team. But the Sixers, I mean, they started this with the process. And so it's unfortunate that this is the mechanism, but it doesn't just mean itself to basketball. You look at baseball now. The Houston Astros became, even though they're cheating, disgusting, awful organization, they tore everything down, compiled all the draft picks, and won a World Series. The Baltimore Orioles are doing the same thing right now. Like, this is the pathway, and you're even starting to see it materialize in the NFL a little bit. There's teams that are completely leveraged, like the LA Rams did for a Super Bowl, and then there are teams that are stockpiling picks and then going all in when it's time, like the Houston Texans and getting CJ Stroud. And you know, it's unfortunately, this mechanism is the manner with which you build and rebuild a team. It's the ebb and flow. I don't think, with the exception of the Wembys of the world, you're ever going to see a dynasty again. I think if you have a player, Jokic is another one of those guys. Giannis, if he can just stay healthy in the playoffs, could be one of those guys. But you have to have one of the three best players on the planet, and that player has to want to play in your market going forward for you to have any kind of dynasty and to keep things going. Otherwise, even the best markets are going to have to reset. Because even the Lakers, after being a destination market, they still had to tear down. Brandon Ingram, top three pick. Lonzo Ball, top three pick. Like, you just go down the list.
2018.
Yeah. Even they had to tear down. So, yeah, it's a position now. I mean, the Blazers are going into this draft with two lotto picks. Number 4, number 14, as it stands right now before the lottery. And then essentially another first-round pick and number 34, and then number 40. They're not going to use all four picks. I will bet a substantial amount of money that they don't use all four picks. I would bet that they use one of the lotto picks and maybe one of the second round picks. Maybe if a guy is there that they like, because under the new CBA, you do have some more advantages of keeping a second round guy. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how that shakes out and how the other quote unquote bad teams, the Pistons, how they draft and what they do, the Wizards and what they do, the Spurs, even though they have Wemby, they have nothing else. Like, what do they do? Like, what do they prioritize here? Do they make a big move? Do they make a move for a star to put alongside Wemby and expedite the process? And I think so much of that is going to happen on draft night and not into free agency.
That's true. That's true. Wow.
Okay. I think I'm good in terms of, everything. I'm sure that's what I think. So, Corbin, let's start with you. Where can everyone find everything you're doing? Because right now you're doing a lot.
I appreciate that. At CorbinNBA, Twitter, Instagram, although I don't really post a lot, but some of my stuff is there. We're doing some things with Swiss Theory, some draft stuff. That's really it. And I just want to say, obviously, Dan, a pleasure meeting you through this. And, like, again, this is a lot of fun. So, yeah, but CorbinNBA.
Hey, anytime, guys.
Huh?
I said anytime. I love it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, for real. I love it.
Okay, Dan, where can everyone find you?
You can find me across social media at Danny Morang, with the exception of Instagram, because somebody's still squatting on my handle. So that's at D Morang. Whoever you are, you can go to hell. Beyond that, Jack Ramsey's Patreon. You can go to youtube.com/Danny Morang or just search Jack Ramsey's. And then every day from noon to 3 on 1080 AM, The Fan, or you can go to youtube.com/1080 AM, The Fan, and watch the live shows or the recorded shows there.
Okay. And you guys can find me on Twitter at @_NBAGELL. That's NBAGELL. You could go listen to the One and Done podcast. I know college basketball season is over, but Grant Suporter never sleeps. Coaching Carousel never sleeps. Plenty to talk about in terms of college basketball. And be on the lookout for my YouTube channel, the Bird Rights YouTube channel. I was just at the Portsmouth Invitational. Had an opportunity to do about 12 player interviews. I'm going to be posting those with some accompanying scouting reports leading up to the draft and some other draft work as well. So be on the lookout for that. And Corbin and I will talk to you guys next episode for our next off-season preview. Probably Washington, maybe San Antonio, one or the other. But be on the lookout for both of those. And again, we will talk to you next episode. Danny, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, it's up, guys. Y'all take care.
Thank you.
You too.
All right.